The Womanity Project. Let's talk about gender. Genders. Gender? Gender equality.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Womanity Project Live. I'm Aurélie Harp, and you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.
I'm not sure where to begin. I find it very hard to focus and find clarity these days. There are so many executive orders, nominations, denominations to fight against. So, we decided instead to go back to our agenda and find sanity and dignity. Because as you know, the purpose of the Womanity Project is to give a voice to meaningful people like you all and open a conversation to advance equality. Today, we have the pleasure to interview Becky Curran, the coordinator of the Equal Employment Opportunity and Diversity Department for SAG-AFTRA and an international motivational speaker.
So I'll start off by letting everyone know that I'm an achondroplastic dwarf. I only mention this because it has a lot to do with my story.
Dwarfism is a condition of short stature. It is defined by the advocacy group Little People of America as an adult height of 4 feet 10 inches or under as a result of a medical or genetic condition.
So you're from Boston? So your whole family is from Boston?
Yes. I have one sister. She's average height. She's 3.5 years older. My dad always jokes that he wanted 2 kids, my mom wanted 1, so they settled at 1.5. My parents are both average height. My dad is, in fact, 6'4".
Wow!
So when I was first born, in the delivery room was when they found out that I was a little person, or a person born with dwarfism. Achondroplasia is actually the most common type of dwarfism, but my parents still didn't know exactly what was going on. The people in the delivery room took me away, had to let them know that I was a little person, and they still didn't know what that meant. What they asked for was as much information as possible that they may have had in the delivery room. And fortunately, there was a doctor who had seen a little person be delivered before, so they were able to give them a little bit of advice. But soon after we left the hospital, my parents then went into Boston. Boston was the area where I was born. And they went to Tufts Medical Center, where they had a genetics office where they can learn a little bit more about dwarfism.
As Becky said, the most common form of dwarfism is achondroplasia. It causes about 70% of all dwarfism and occurs in about 1 out of 26 to 40,000 babies and is evident at birth. People with achondroplasia have a relatively long trunk and shortened upper parts of their arms and legs.
When they first walked into the hospital to ask where the genetics office was, the receptionist told them to follow the sign that said birth defects. And wow. That, of course, made their hearts sink, and they were really worried because why are you telling people who just had a baby that they're really nervous? Just they want to make sure their baby is going to be okay. Why are you telling them that their child has birth defects? So my dad later wrote a letter to the hospital saying you need to change this. And fortunately, they eventually changed the sign to genetics. And that just is a testament of how hard my parents have worked to be advocates in the space and make sure that I could end up having the best life possible, despite the challenges that we'd face as I was growing up. So after I was born, of course, I was on watch, just wanted to make sure that everything was going to be okay medically. When I was 6 months old, they found a specialist all the way down in Baltimore. So we did end up sometimes twice a year, sometimes once a year, just depending on the need, driving down to Baltimore to my specialist. And I had a doctor who was my general practitioner, but he just didn't have as much information as the dwarfism specialist had. I had to wear a brace just to make sure that my body was aligning okay as I was growing. And then I eventually had to have leg surgery when I was 3 years old. From when I was born to when I was 3 years old, my legs started bowing, and that was later going to affect the alignment of my whole body. So I ended up having leg surgery where I had bone taken out of my fibula area. And then when I was 13, I ended up having another surgery to put bone back in my legs to straighten them out. And another surgery that I had at 15 was what, 7 pieces of my lower vertebrae were taken out because I have spinal cord compression. When I'm sitting down, as an adult, I'm the same height as most average height adults, but my torso still has everything more compact inside. So I've always had to be very careful about weight management and making sure that I pay attention when things are going wrong, like tingling that may happen in my arms and legs. And other surgeries I had growing up were related to tubes and tonsils and adenoids. Those are a little more common, but we have very narrow ear canals, so that was something I had to watch out for. One of my surgeries, they hit my eardrum, and that has caused a little bit of perforation in my right ear, but fortunately, my left ear makes up for it. And the reason I bring all this up is medically, that's a concern with the little people community. Everyone worries about just fitting in, and a lot of people don't know this part of the amount of surgeries that we have to go through just to fit in. And we always tell people we don't want people to feel bad for us. We just want them to accept us. So we're not always willing to share those stories of medical complications because we just want to fit in.
And just to be clear, dwarfism is not a disease. However, there is greater risk of some health problem. With proper medical care, most people with dwarfism have active lives and live as long as other people.
Fortunately, my parents gave me the strength to keep going. When I had my back surgery, I was already all honors on the swim team, soccer team, sailing, all with my average height peers, and my biggest fear was a setback. So I missed 29 days of school. They offered to have me stay back, so I would go to 11th grade with the class behind me, but I fought to make sure that I stayed with my class. When I was first going, just trying to figure out school in general, when I was younger, the doctor recommended to my parents try to keep her in the same school system, try to keep her with the same class, because that'll prevent a lot of bullying from happening, because a lot of the same people will be with her along the way to protect her. And I did have someone in my class from preschool to 7th grade that was there in case people were making comments, and she wasn't told to just stick up for me every time it happened, but it just became a natural thing where it was like, you shouldn't make fun of people. And socially, just fitting in was always a struggle growing up, but it was nice to have that person who could really advocate for me as I was growing up. She's still a friend. I think it's funny. I thought when we were younger, it was so funny how our parents, we are like, what? They don't stay in touch with their high school or college friends. Like, that's so weird. But then you get older, life gets busy. But we try to stay in touch, I think, through social media. It got a little harder, though, even with that same person and other people. It got harder in 11th grade as a lot of my friends started liking guys and they wanted to have their alone time with the other people like them, trying to go out with the guys. Maybe they'd go on double dates, triple dates, and I never really fit into the equation. So that was a really tough time, even though I had made it that far, but it was right after my back surgery. Everyone was really supportive throughout my surgery process, but right after that, when people started dating, it was really challenging. I was left home a lot. I now look back and think I should have been more thankful or suggested to go out and do more things with my parents. But, you know, that age, it's not cool to hang out with your parents.
No, you're a teenager.
Exactly. So that was a tough time. So it took me time to get over that hump. And I think as we've gotten older, I've gotten closer to people again. But it was hard to deal with that and then still stay close to people.
Becky is passionate about finding a way to change how little people and all people with disability are perceived in the media. which ultimately influences the opinions of society as a whole. She is herself an active voice of the organization Little People of America, a nonprofit organization that provides support and information to people of short stature and their families.
I got involved in the Little People of America organization. I didn't think that I needed to get involved until college. So I was like, I've had my average high friends, I'm good, I don't need to be with people like me. But then college age, I realized it was really important for me to be with people like me.
Becky has chosen to be part of the disability community as a whole. Little People is part of the ADA Act.
And more recently, I've gotten involved in more of a leadership capacity. People know that I'm really passionate about public speaking, and I presented a TED Talk in 2014.
Most people ask me, if I were to do it all over again, would I still want to be a little person? And I always respond by saying, I would still choose to be a little person, but I would change the way that society reacts to my difference. Sometimes I'm approached in fear. People point, stare, laugh. Other times, people show some respect. It's been about 3 years since I've been actively advocating for the disability community in the media. I want to see more things on screen showing what people are capable of and proper representations of them in the media.
There's been some great progression in the media. The most notorious actor being Peter Dinklage in Game of Thrones, who is now known and recognized as a talented actor who happened to be a little person. There are also shows like TLC's Little People, Big World, and Little Couple that are changing people's perception and help people understand that little people are part of the society and they just want an equal chance to participate.
The Little People organization reached out to me to ask if I would host a speaker's night, which ended up happening in 2014, and then they did a second one in 2016. And I really wanted, in the Speaker's Night in 2014 that took place in San Diego, there were some mothers who write blogs of little people, and I wanted to still have that adult perspective for the second time around, an average height parent talking about their child, and I thought, who better than my father, who gave me the confidence and ability to speak and be out in the area, different schools, places around the world. So he agreed to do it. And he really thought about how he could help a lot of parents, how he could share his perspective. And he was scared out of his mind when I was first born, and I don't want that to ever be a secret, because no one is alone. Like, when you know that your child is different, you just want to try to figure out how to make it as easy as possible for them to be accepted and have the best life possible. And he didn't have an easy upbringing, and he wanted to learn everything that went wrong, so that wouldn't happen as he was raising his children.
Many of you know me as Becky's dad, and I'm very proud of being known for that. It's so tempting as parents of little person or any child to be overprotective. Although it's difficult, we as parents need to encourage our children to take risks and to fly away from our nests. Becky graduated from Providence College in 2006. And at the age of 21, told us she wanted to move to LA, where she might have a chance to influence the way Hollywood portrayed little people. Her belief was that if the media changed the way little people and others with disabilities were portrayed in the media, the perceptions of the general public will change. No dad wants his child to move away. But I realized that day that Linda and I had accomplished our goal of giving Becky and Courtney senses of humor, good senses of self, and clearly senses of independence. And I would encourage you all to do the same. Thank you.
When I first moved from Providence College, where I went to school, all the way out to California, my dad left a note for me saying, I always wanted you to be independent, but I never thought you'd be this independent. But they also knew that they gave me all the tools I needed to figure out how to navigate this world that doesn't necessarily know how to navigate my presence.
Becky's father says, it is so tempting as parents of a little person or any child to be overprotective. Let's hear how her parents empowered her.
They wouldn't let me get away with things. They wouldn't let me get away with, I can't. As soon as I was able to, I enrolled in the local soccer team and I was involved with swimming. And I think that was the greatest gift, to be able to participate in these athletic activities that one may think they can't participate in because they're quote unquote different. It was important for them to just let me do what everyone else my age was doing. Because if they left me at home and kept me inside and not experiencing the world around us, I think that would have been a bigger detriment. It would have been terrible. I think it was important to encourage that independence early on. Even when I was on the swim team, I would be competing in races and they would have me do half of what everyone else did so I could feel that I was more at the level of everyone else. So sometimes I would come back with a blue first ribbon, and sometimes if I ended up doing the whole thing, I would be in dead last. But it was something that I had to be okay with. I had to be okay with the reality that it takes me twice as long to do things. And also, I wanted the team to be okay with it. I didn't want them to feel that it was unfair. We all have wanted our whole lives to be treated just like everyone else and on a level playing field. I shouldn't just get away with something because I'm different or don't know any better. I think it's important for us to understand that we're all human first. I think it was really helpful that my dad grew up in the town that we grew up in. And my mother was also a special education teacher in the middle school, and that also helped because a lot of the teachers knew my mother. I never had her as an actual teacher. I was not enrolled in the special education classes because there was no need for me to be enrolled in those areas, but she was in the school. A lot of people knew her and respected her, and I think that helped because a lot of times in any environment, it's very helpful when someone flat out admits to you that, oh, they have a sibling or a friend that they grew up with that had some type of physical difference, and they understand just a little bit more than that next person. They understand how to be just a little bit more respectful than someone else may think to be. I think it was really helpful that my dad grew up in the town that we grew up in, and my mother was also a special education teacher in the middle school, and that also helped because a lot of the teachers knew my mother. I never had her as an actual teacher. I was not enrolled in the special education classes because there was no need for me to be enrolled in those areas, but she was in the school. A lot of people knew her and respected her, and I think that helped because a lot of times in any environment, it's very helpful when someone flat out admits to you that, oh, they have a sibling or a friend that they grew up with that had some type of physical difference, and they understand just a little bit more than that next person. They understand how to be just a little bit more respectful than someone else may think to be. And of course, a lot of it is lack of the unknown or fear of the unknown. There are only 30,000 little people in the entire United States. So I always tell people you could put all of us in a big university setting and then you wouldn't see another little person around the country. So that's why people fear it so much, because they don't know. Their perception is based on what they see in the media. So if it's positive, they'll treat us with respect. If it's negative, they may approach us in fear. And I think my experience was different from a lot of people. Even now, I have so many parents who let me know just what's going on in their communities, and it's really sad to say it almost feels, at least with my experience, that we've gone backwards. And a lot of these parents are similar to my parents, where they're our type parents, and they just want to do whatever they can to make their child feel protected and be able to fit in. And sometimes what they end up doing is they end up holding them back because they don't want them to be exposed to cruelty and people's comments and bullying. Ultimately, everyone just needs to understand that it's okay to be different, and we all have more in common than we do different.
You're listening to the Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. And let's see now how Becky answers the Womanity questionnaire.
What is the best way, by the way, to talk about your condition? Is it to say little people, dwarf?
I appreciate when people ask me the question because everyone has a different preference. Some people find dwarf offensive because they think it's related to fictional characters, but then some people find little people offensive because they think the term little is degrading. So I don't mind either. I usually tell people if we're not referring to my condition, first focus on calling me by my name, and then we can talk more about what you may want to refer to me as.
Sure.
But I would say little person or dwarf are both okay, with me.
What gender do you identify with?
I identify as a female. And I guess maybe a follow-up question without even being asked it is, I would say as a little person, as a female, it's harder to fit in socially. It's just that people have some level of respect for guys, especially no matter what type of difference. And I think socially, at least adolescence, growing up, it's easier for guys to fit into social settings. I would say during my 11th grade challenges, trying to fit in and just even being able to go out socially with my friends, they didn't want me to be around because of the potential dating that they may do coming out of these gatherings. And I don't think guys would be as worried or conscious of it. They wouldn't necessarily care if I was there.
Yeah.
But I think there's a flip side to it where when it comes to dating, there are a lot of fetishes that exist among the average height community and little people. I would say that by observation, it's more likely for a female to have a strong relationship with an average height male. It's still a challenge to have because fetishes exist and you have to feed through those. When it comes to a male wanting to date a female who's average height, a lot of females feel that they want to be with someone who can protect them, someone who's bigger than them, taller than them. They're not necessarily going to rush to date a little person, but they're going to have them as their sidekick. They're going to be their best friend, but it's never going to leave the friend zone.
For you, what are the attributes you put behind being a female?
My dad actually sometimes jokes that I'm his son because sometimes I think more like a man. But I would say emotions. I can be a very emotional person when it comes to certain situations. Even though it's later in my life, I moved to New York when I was 30. As I started just experiencing living in Washington Heights, I think the amount of times that I get catcalled, I have to separate it out. I have to figure out, is it because I'm a female or is it because I'm a little person?
Can you share with us a memory or a day where you felt, first of all, very proud of being who you are?
I think it's those moments when I give a speech and then I have people reach out to me after saying how much it helped.
And was there a time that where you felt limited about who you are?
So when I first moved to California, I had a job working for a female who's also a little person, and I still have yet to meet this lady to this day. So I flew out to California, was ready to work, job fell through. I then had to apply to over 1,000 places in Los Angeles, and then that was followed by 400 interviews, and I was interviewing up to 4 times a day.
Wow.
And most of the times while I was interviewing, I was interviewed by females, and the minute I walked in the room, they would judge me based on my appearance. I even had someone who looked at me and said, "How did you get here?" They bent down, and I had to respond by saying I drove, and then they proceeded to call me cute, and it just was
cute.
A very uncomfortable situation, and I don't know if they would do that with a male. It was weird. There were a lot of times, and just a lot of times in life, there are people who try to bend down and talk to me like I'm less than, and I won't even give them the time of day, because
yeah, you're like,
we're not getting anywhere with that.
Even though, like, let's face it, like, and that's one of the reasons why I'm doing the show as well is I think sometimes when people don't know, that you're very uncomfortable with the unknown. It's not always because people are mean or stupid or, you know, it's
I always encourage people to ask questions, don't make assumptions, because the minute you make an assumption, they always say that's making an ass of you and me.
If there was something you feel like either you're doing and you want to continue, or something you're thinking about and you'd like to do to help another person, another woman, another maybe woman with your condition or not, what would it be?
And what That's a great question. When I went to Africa, I spoke in Kenya. One of the reasons I went there is because someone had reached out to me. I have yet to meet her as well. She lives in South Africa. She said, I wish I could have your level of confidence. And I think it's really important, especially for women with disabilities. And I would like to give back to the disability community and give them that level of confidence that I've been able to instill, that my parents have been able to instill in myself. And I'm hopeful that that can then allow more women to get out there and share their story.
You've been listening to the Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. You can like us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Womanity Project. You can support us and sponsor us on our page, radiofreebrooklyn.com/thewomanityproject. And you can listen to all our episodes on audioboom.com/womanityproject. Special thanks to Becky Curran, Lizzie Hackstedt, and of course, Radio Free Brooklyn. Tune in next week, The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And dear listeners, we will leave you with the power song chosen by Becky, Don't Stop Believing by Journey. Au revoir tout le monde, à la semaine prochaine!
Soft to drugs. He took the midnight train.